54, Section 2, Farmer Discontent and Populism. As you read, look for farmers' organizations, the rise and fall of the Populist Party, the county unit system, terms, farmers' alliance, co-op, graduated income tax, Populist Party, fraud, county unit system. In the late 1880s, a new challenge to the power of the Bourbon Democrats began to emerge, one that might challenge white supremacy as well. Many of Georgia's middle class and poor farmers became increasingly unhappy as cotton prices dropped at the same time that the prices of goods they needed to buy went up. Railroad rates made the cost of shipping their products to market even higher. Many could barely make a living. Owners of small farms sometimes found themselves having to sell their land to pay debts. Like sharecroppers, many of them were using the crop lien system to buy the materials they needed. Because of the high interest rates they had to pay on the credit they got, there was often little or nothing left after they paid the merchant. Some ended up becoming tenant farmers or sharecroppers. Farmers believed that taxes were unfair, and many even thought that they did not get the respect they once had. Electricity and telephones and the other wonders of the age had not yet made it to the countryside. Farmers' lives still revolved around long hours of hard physical work with none of the conveniences that city dwellers had. As farmers became more discontented, they organized, eventually founding a political party to work for major reforms. The Farmers' Alliance. Farmers in other areas of the South and in the prairie states like Kansas and Nebraska had united to form farmers' organizations. The first farmers' group was the Patrons of Husbandry, which soon became known as the Grange. In the late 1870s and early 1880s, the farmers' alliances formed. State alliances were members of larger regional alliances. There were two regional alliances in the South: the Southern Farmers Alliance for white farmers and the Colored Farmers Alliance for African American farmers. The alliances served several purposes. Farmers, who worked alone most of the time, could come together for friendship and to talk about their problems. They could also join together in cooperative buying stores or co-ops. The co-ops bought supplies, seed, fertilizer, farm tools, so they could negotiate lower prices. The White Farmers Alliance in Georgia began in 1887. In 1889, it successfully joined with other farmers in the South to boycott the Monopoly, a group with exclusive control, that sold jute, the material used to bind and cover cotton bales. The boycott resulted in lower prices. That success brought the alliance many new Georgia members and more power. African American farmers started their own alliance in Georgia in 1889, meeting in Macon. In 1890, the alliance began to get involved in politics. Members wanted reforms, including the use of silver as well as gold for money, the end of the convict lease system, the secret ballot for voting, and a graduated income tax. That means that the higher a person's income, the higher the percentage of tax that person would pay. It was based on the idea of the burden of the tax. People who had more money would not be as burdened by a higher tax. The alliances also called for the government to take ownership of railroads and communications, such as the telegraph and the newer invention, the telephone. Under government ownership, they believed prices would come down because there would no longer be a need for profits for stockholders. In the 1890 election, the Georgia Alliance encouraged voters to elect only Democrats who supported the alliance reforms. Alliance member William J. Northern of Hancock County had no opposition in the governor's race. The alliance was also successful in electing six U.S. congressmen and a majority of the legislators in both houses of the Georgia legislature. In fact, this Georgia General Assembly got the nickname the Farmers' Legislature. Unfortunately, however, many of the men who had pledged themselves to alliance reforms were not friends of the alliance once they were in office. They did not enact most of the reforms the farmers had wanted, and they appointed John B. Gordon as a U.S. Senator, even though he opposed many of the alliance ideas. This major disappointment led many farmers to see the alliance as ineffective, and membership in the group fell quickly. The People's Populist Party. In its place arose a new political group, one that had begun in the Plains states. This group believed in populism, the political doctrine that supports the rights and powers of the common people in their struggle with the privileged elite. Farmers joined with members of labor organizations to form a new political party called the People's Party, which was usually called the Populist Party. Thomas E. Watson of Thomson became not only the leading spokesman for populism in Georgia, but a major figure in the movement nationally. Watson was born in 1856 in what is now McDuffie County. He attended Mercer University for 2 years and later read law while teaching school. He settled in Thomson in 1877, becoming well known as a down-to-earth trial lawyer. Elected to the state legislature in 1882, Watson became disillusioned by efforts to promote industry in Georgia and wanted to support the agricultural way of life. He supported liberal causes, including public education and the ending of the convict lease system. He became known for his support of poor farmers and sharecroppers, black and white. In the late 1880s, he supported the reforms of the Farmers' Alliance. In 1890, he won the seat of his district in the U.S. House of Representatives. He made his reputation when he did not support Georgia Democratic Congressman Charles Crisp for the position of Speaker of the House. Crisp was a Bourbon Democrat who had opposed the reforms of the Alliance. Watson's action made him a respected politician among farmers. In 1892, the National Populist Party was strong in those states with large numbers of farmers. At its first national convention, it adopted a platform with many reforms. The party tried to make life better not only for farmers, but also for factory workers and other people left out of the growing wealth that industrialization was creating. Among other reforms, the populist platform called for a graduated income tax, government ownership of railroads and communications, a better system of credit for farmers, an 8-hour workday for factory workers, and a more democratic political system allowing the people themselves to vote for their U.S. senators rather than having them chosen by the state legislatures. They also believed in a secret ballot so voters could not be threatened into voting in a particular way. The party nominated James B. Weaver as their candidate for President of the United States. In 1892, Georgia populists held their first convention and nominated farmer W.L. Peek as their candidate for governor. The convention also chose candidates for other state offices and for U.S. Congress. Tom Watson was the populist candidate for his congressional seat. Many of Georgia's populists were yeoman farmers, owners of small farms threatened by the debt of crop lien. The populists hoped to draw members of labor organizations into their party. While they had some success in some southern states, that strategy was not very successful in many areas of Georgia. In a few counties, members of the Knights of Labor, a national labor organization, did work with populists. The Democrats tried to keep whites, including farmers, in their party by calling for white supremacy and pointing out the danger of splitting the white vote between the Democrats and the populist. While populist voters, including Watson, did not believe in the social intermixing of the races, they did appeal to black voters by showing how populist reforms would help them. the populace tried to convince white farmers that they had common problems with black farmers and that both groups would benefit from populist reforms. The Democrats also tried to get black votes, sometimes by intimidation and violence. After an intense and emotional campaign, the Democrats defeated most of the populist, including Tom Watson. In some places, dishonest voting or counting of votes had taken place. This is known as fraud. The populist lost the presidential race as well. The populist did better in the western states, where they won hundreds of state and local offices. In 1893, the entire nation fell into the worst economic depression that had happened up to that time. Banks closed and businesses went bankrupt. Farmers and workers suffered as prices dropped. At this time, there were no government programs to help the poor and the unemployed. The hard times revived the Populist Party. In the 1894 election, the populist made some gains. In Georgia, populists won more white and black voters. Once again, however, Tom Watson lost his bid for the U.S. House of Representatives. At the state level, however, the election of both state senators and representatives gave the populist representation in Georgia's legislature. For the next 2 years, Georgia's Democrats tried to woo the populist back to the party. The next major contest was in 1896, the year of the U.S. presidential election. At their convention, the Democrats nominated the young and talented speaker, William Jennings Bryan. They adopted many of the populist reforms for their platform, including the ideas of silver as well as gold money, the graduated income tax, and the direct election of U.S. senators. When the Democrats adopted these reforms, the populists had a problem. Should they support Bryan for president, hoping to get some of their ideas passed into law? Or should they remain a separate party with their own candidate? That might split the vote of those who agreed with their ideas. After much discussion, the populists decided to also nominate Bryan as their presidential candidate, but many opposed the Democrats' vice presidential candidate, Arthur Sewell, a banker. So Georgia's Tom Watson became the populist vice presidential nominee. He agreed, believing that Bryan would replace Sewell on the Democratic ticket with him, but Sewell remained the Democrats' vice presidential nominee. In Georgia, the Democrats had passed some reforms, and the state party also adopted the crucial issue of silver coinage. That issue brought most farmers back to the Democratic Party. The result was a major defeat for the populist. They lost over 20 of their state legislative seats. Bryan won the electoral votes of the South and much of the West. He still lost overwhelmingly to Republican William McKinney, who got the popular and electoral votes of industrial, urban states with much greater populations. This was the beginning of the end for the People's Party in the United States. It never again became as strong as it had been following the 1893 economic downturn. In Georgia, the populist faded as well. Most whites went back into the Democratic Party. The remaining populist did nominate Watson in 1904 and 1908 as their presidential candidate, but they were no longer a significant party. One party rule. Populism had stirred up racial tensions in Georgia. The Democrats had tried to keep whites in the party by appealing to racism and the goal of preserving white power. Although initially white populists had appealed to African American farmers to join them, some populists also began speaking against blacks and defending ideas of social inequality. The hope that some African Americans had for a party that would offer reforms for them too died quickly. Ultimately, whites in power decided that the threat that poor whites and blacks might join together could not be tolerated. A movement began to find ways to keep blacks out of the political process altogether. The Democrats wanted to make sure that if whites had disagreements about politics again, they could split without worrying about blacks gaining power. With the end of populism, Georgia was basically a one-party state, with the Democrats firmly in control for decades. Even though the Republican Party still existed in the South, no Republican could actually win statewide office in Georgia or other Southern states. To make sure that the right Democrats kept power, the Democratic Party began certain practices in the late 1800s to eliminate any challenges to the elite class. You will learn about some of those in the next chapter. County unit system. One of the practices began informally in the Democratic Party. In Georgia, the Democratic Party primary was very important for statewide offices because the Democratic candidate always won in the general election held later. In the late 1890s, in the Democratic primaries, candidates for statewide office were chosen not by the overall popular vote, but by the votes of each county. This system was called the county unit system. For each representative that the county had in the Georgia General Assembly, the county got 2 unit votes. Representation was laid out in the 1877 Constitution, which had 3 levels of representation: the most populated counties, the next 26 counties, and the least populated counties. Since there were more rural counties, the rural counties always outvoted the urban counties. Meanwhile, Atlanta and some of the Fall Line cities grew in the early 20th century and became increasingly industrialized and modernized. The rural counties wanted to make sure that their ability to control the legislature, the governor's office, and other statewide offices would continue. In 1917, the legislature passed the Neal Primary Act, which made the informal county unit system into law. For decades, the smallest, most rural counties had far more political power than the largest. This caused increasing problems as the business-oriented cities became more moderate on racial matters and more concerned about policies that were good for business. By the time Georgia had 159 counties, the 8 largest urban counties had only 48 county unit votes. The majority of the next 26 town counties were more rural than urban, and so they tended to support the same policies as the rural counties. Although the county unit system was challenged in courts, the federal courts were initially hesitant to get involved. The system did not change until 1962 with a Tennessee case called Baker v. Carr, where the U.S. Supreme Court said that each person's vote should count equally. We will see what a change this made in Georgia when we study the period after World War II. Reviewing the section. 1. Define Farmers Alliance, Co-op, Graduated Income Tax. 2. Who was the Georgian who was a spokesman for the Populist Party? 3. Give reasons why people supported the county unit system and reasons why people opposed it. Page 461, Georgia Portraits. Tom Watson and Rural Free Delivery. In the late 1800s, those who lived on farms and in rural areas were often isolated. Radio and television had not yet been invented, and many rural areas did not yet have telephones. For most, the connection to the outside world was the mail. While people in cities had their mail delivered to them for free, that was not the case in rural areas. A farm family had to go to town for mail. This was not a quick trip on foot, horseback, or in a horse-drawn cart over mostly unpaved roads. Imagine the disappointment after such a journey if the family had no mail. Some more well-to-do farmers sometimes paid mail carriers to bring mail to them. One Georgia congressman paid $100 a year to have his mail delivered. One of the reforms that farmers in the Grange and the Farmers Alliance had called for was free mail delivery in rural areas. They thought it was unfair for city people to have mail delivered to their doors while rural people did not, since both had to pay the same postage. Opponents said a rural mail system would cost too much money. As a reformer for the farmers, Tom Watson supported this cause. While he was a U.S. congressman, Watson introduced a bill in 1892 setting aside money for an experiment in rural free delivery, RFD. Although the bill passed, the postmaster refused to put the program into effect. But the idea slowly gained supporters. In 1896, with a new postmaster, the first experimental routes were established. One of the 44 experimental routes in the United States was in Quitman, Georgia. RFD became very popular, and Congress made it permanent in 1902. An 1899 report of the postmaster said, "There has been nothing in the history of the Postal Service of the United States so remarkable as the growth of the rural free delivery system. The system led to an increase in the value of farmland that was on an RFD route, to a movement to improve roads so areas could get routes, and to increased postal revenue. Perhaps most importantly, it had connected rural people with newspapers, magazines, crop reports, and other materials that made them better informed citizens. Because of his important role in this legislation, Tom Watson got the name Father of Rural Free Delivery."